The late, great soprano Beverly Sills recalled in her autobiography that she was once performing in a concert that also involved two of the 20th century's most renowned musicians, cellist Pablo Casals and conductor Leopold Stokowski. In the 1940s, Stokowski had married a woman more than four decades younger than he, and in the 1950s, Casals had done the same thing. Sills was watching Casals play. She was seated next to Stokowski, and he whispered to her, "Look at that Casals. How young, how attractive, how strong he is. That's what happens when you marry a young wife." Then later, Casals was sitting next to Sills, and they were watching Stokowski conduct. Casals whispered to Sills, "Look at that marvelous Stokowski. So young, so strong, so virile. That's what happens when you marry a young wife." Sills wondered if the two of them had rehearsed the routine just for her. Well, the attitude about that kind of marriage couldn't be more different in Gaetano Donizetti's Don Pasquale. We've got three characters who are all out to teach an old man that it's really not a good idea for him to marry at all, let alone marry a woman many years younger. Pasquale does so, the result being all manner of comic intrigue, accompanied by a score that the whole world has recognized as one of the gems of bel canto. Hello, I'm Roger Pines, dramaturg at Lyric Opera of Chicago, and it's my pleasure to speak to you about Don Pasquale. I'll be using excerpts from an EMI Classics recording with Beverly Sills herself singing Norina. She's joined by Donald Graham in the title role, Alan Titus as Dr. Malatesta, and as Ernesto, Alfredo Kraus, who sang that role during three different seasons at Lyric Opera. In this recording, our soloists, the London Symphony Orchestra, and the Ambrosian Opera Chorus are all under the direction of Sarah Caldwell. When Donizetti created Don Pasquale, he was essentially paying homage to a comic tradition that went back nearly three centuries to Commedia dell'arte. Presentations created in that style often included a foolish old man, Pantalone, a delectable young woman, Colombina, a lovelorn young man, Pierrot, and a devilishly clever servant full of tricks who was called Scapino. In the opera, the traits of those characters are embodied in their 19th century equivalents, Pasquale, Norina, Ernesto, and Malatesta. Donizetti is the most prolific major opera composer of all time. The grand total of his operas numbers nearly 70. His sheer facility was incredible. He could turn out a full-length opera in a matter of weeks. In his huge operatic output, Don Pasquale was third to last. He introduced it in 1843 in Paris at the Théâtre Italien, where many important works were premiered during the first half of the 19th century. Donizetti had been living in Paris for 6 years. He'd left Naples after a demoralizing experience there when the censor's objections kept his new opera, Poliuto, from reaching the stage. Of his last 15 operas, nearly half were premiered in Paris, including La Favorite and La Fille du Régiment. It's believed that as far back as 1815, when he was living in Bologna, Donizetti contracted syphilis. The disease didn't begin to affect him seriously for quite a few years, but by the time of Don Pasquale, he was already suffering badly. It's amazing to think that in all his physical and emotional distress, he was able to produce a comedy as uproarious as this one. The libretto was the work of Salvatore Camerano, who had prepared Donizetti's text for Lucia di Lammermoor, and a decade later would collaborate with Verdi on Il Trovatore. He adapted the Don Pasquale libretto from an earlier one he'd written for an opera entitled Ser Marcantonio by a certain Stefano Pavesi. That opera had a success at La Scala in 1810, but it faded away pretty quickly after the triumph of Don Pasquale. Donizetti was writing for four of the most celebrated singers of the 19th century. They were actually known unofficially as the Puritani Quartet, a soprano tenor, baritone, and bass who had ennobled performances of Bellini's I Puritani throughout Europe. Lyric Opera in 2012-13 is presenting a traditional Pasquale, which means the locale is Rome in the early 1800s. After an exhilarating overture featuring some of the opera's most memorable themes, we meet Pasquale himself. He's home, it's 9 o'clock in the morning, and he's expecting his friend Dr. Malatesta to arrive at any moment. When Malatesta finally appears, he announces that he's found a bride for Pasquale. By way of describing this paragon among young women, Malatesta sings an exceptionally buoyant and graceful aria that Donizetti composed especially for Antonio Tamburini, unquestionably the most admired baritone of the bel canto era. Malatesta is painting a glorious picture of the prospective bride, beautiful as an angel, with wonderful eyes and hair, pure of soul, modest. Well, she's goodness itself.
Bella siccome un angelo in terra pellegrino, fresca siccome giglio che s'apre sul mattino, occhio che
Malatesta is a very good actor, especially when declaring that the girl he's talking about is his own sister. He's planning to bring her to see Pasquale that very day. Once Malatesta has gone, Pasquale explodes with excitement in a brief aria, Un fuoco insolito mi sento addosso. A strange fire is burning within me. I can't resist it. He's feeling like a young man again, and he can already envision fathering a whole brood of children. This music has a wonderful vitality about it, but even though Pasquale is a fabulous comic role, it still has to be sung with elegance, as it is here by Donald Graham, and as it surely was at its premiere by the full-figured, full-voiced Luigi Lablache, the first truly great comic bass of the 19th century.
Insolito mi sento rosso, mai resistere io più lo posso, dell'età vecchia scorpi malanni, e sento giovine come a metanni, de cara fretta di vieni sponsina, ecco di bamboli in mezza dozzina, già vego nascere, già vego crescere, a me intorno vengo scherzare, vengo già nascere, vengo già crescere, a me intorno vengo scherzare.
When his nephew Ernesto arrives, Pasquale immediately starts nagging him. Wasn't it a couple of months ago that I offered you the hand of a beautiful young noblewoman and promised to leave all my possessions to you? And if you refused, I threatened to disinherit you and take a wife myself. Well, I'm offering you that young woman's hand one more time. But Ernesto is adamant. He loves Norina, a lovely young widow. And although she's poor, he wants to marry her. Pasquale decides that Ernesto, who's been living under his roof, must be kicked out of the house. Pasquale also lets his nephew know that he's about to take a wife himself. Ernesto laughs at that idea, but when he realizes that Pasquale is serious, he breaks into a lament. All his dreams for himself and Norina are now dashed, and he'll give her up rather than lead her alongside him into poverty. He sings one of the opera's most affecting melodies, Sogno soave e casto, sweet and pure dream. In its arching lines and wonderfully graceful phrasing, it totally exemplifies bel canto's expressive elegance. The first Ernesto, a tenor known to the public simply as Mario, had a famously beautiful voice and was also the most dashingly handsome singer of his time, the very image of the romantic hero.
Sogno soave e casto, dei miei prim'anni, addio, bramai ricchezze vasto, solo per te mio.
Che origina
Like his uncle, Ernesto is also a friend of Malatesta, so he's shocked to discover that the doctor has arranged for his own sister to be Pasquale's bride. Ernesto feels totally betrayed. We move to Norina's home, where she's engrossed in a romantic novel all about how a brave knight is intoxicated by the eyes of his beloved and swears never to love anyone else. Norina declares that she, too, knows how to use her charms to capture a man's heart. This role was created for a true prima donna, the vocally dazzling Giulia Grisi. No doubt she communicated to an ideal degree the confidence and take-charge quality that Norina possesses. In the course of this opening aria, we see that Norina is one lively, witty, feisty gal. This is also one of the bounciest, most sparkling arias Donizetti ever gave a soprano. Norina is expecting Dr. Malatesta. She wants more details from him about his plan to fool Don Pasquale. Just as Malatesta arrives, a note is delivered, and Norina hands it to Malatesta to read. It's Ernesto's farewell message to Norina. He's leaving the city forever, since he's been thrown out and disinherited by his uncle. Pasquale is about to marry the sister of the man Ernesto describes as that villain, Dr. Malatesta. The doctor now explains that he has a plan that will keep Ernesto from taking such a drastic step. Seeing how Pasquale has been behaving, Malatesta is now working in the best interests of both Ernesto and Norina. Since Pasquale knows that Malatesta has a sister in a convent, the plan is for Norina to impersonate her as the new bride. Norina agrees to the plan, and together they sing a duet in which Malatesta rehearses her in the role. I'll give you the section where she's asking, "Do you want me to play her as proud or sad? Should I cry or scream?" Malatesta suggests that she play just a simple young girl. I love to hear how the soprano handles this passage, how she colors her voice with all those different qualities she's asking about. It gives her a great chance to show her sense of humor. In Act Two, we're back at Pasquale's home. Ernesto continues to be miserable over being rejected by his uncle and betrayed by Malatesta. Having written his farewell letter to Norina, he's now ready to leave the country. He has another sweetly melancholy aria in which he reveals his intention to find some faraway realm where no one knows him and where he can finish out his life in misery. This is vocally challenging, and that Donizetti really works the singer hard, right at the top of the staff, in that delicate place known as the passaggio, the transition between chest and head voice.
Thank you.
After Ernesto leaves, Pasquale appears, dressed to the nines and ready to receive his bride, played by Norina. She arrives, escorted by Malatesta. She's dressed very simply and with her face covered by a veil. She does her best to look terribly apprehensive. Pasquale can barely conceal his excitement. He delights in what he's seen so far, but Norina pretends to be horrified when Malatesta pushes her towards Pasquale. Un uomo, fuggiamo! A man, let's get out of here! Pasquale thinks she's charming, but Malatesta and Norina in their asides say to themselves, old fool, you don't know what you're in for. It makes for an adorable, musically irresistible trio.
Ci son io, c'è Don Pasquale.
Come?
Malatesta introduces Pasquale to the girl whom he identifies as Sofronia. Pasquale complains about her veil, but Malatesta replies, she'd never dare to speak to a man with her face uncovered. Pasquale asks Sofronia a few questions about her life in the convent, to which she responds demurely. When she's finally persuaded to lift her veil, Pasquale falls back. Her beauties made him literally weak at the knees. She agrees to marry him, and he begs Malatesta to send for a notary immediately. Well, Malatesta's brought one with him. It's his cousin, who now conveniently appears. Malatesta dictates the terms of the marriage contract, and Pasquale adds that his wife will inherit half his possessions. Both parties now give the contract their signature. Suddenly, Ernesto rushes in. He hasn't heard about Norina's involvement in the plan to fool Pasquale, and he's appalled as he watches his uncle and Norina signing a marriage contract. But a second later, Norina shocks Pasquale by turning into a shrew. Malatesta quietly asks Ernesto not to say anything, and he finally starts to get the picture. Pasquale tries to turn him out of the house, but Norina cries, "No! This young man must stay. I want him as my escort." She now turns to her aged bridegroom. "I've been nice up to now, but if you give me trouble, I'll use my fists on you." It's typical for a bel canto comedy that, after a moment of crazed energy, the composer gives the principals some time to pause and reflect in calm, beautiful legato phrases. That's what happens here in a breathtakingly beautiful quartet, in which Pasquale wonders if he's dreaming all this, while the others comment in amusement. Now the shenanigans start up again. Norina, or rather Sofronia, has decided to double the major domo's pay. She also declares her intention to hire more servants and have the house refurnished. Pasquale bitterly complains that he's been betrayed and ridiculed. This begins the finale of Act Two. Few finales in opera are more exhilarating than this one. Keeping the excitement under control is one huge challenge for the conductor. In Act Three, the curtain rises on the redecorated home of Don Pasquale, with the servants running around dealing with everything just purchased by the new mistress of the house. Pasquale is digging through all the bills that Sofronia has accumulated. It's their wedding night, but when she appears, attired in a fabulous gown, it's to announce that she's going out to the theater to enjoy herself alone. When he strenuously objects, she toys with him. Just go to bed. Sleep well. We'll talk tomorrow. They lose their patience with each other, and finally she slaps him. That's it, he says to himself quietly and sadly. It's all over for you, Don Pasquale. Norina feels badly, knowing full well that she's taken the joke a little too far. But she feels she had to do that for anything to have an effect. So she continues with the masquerade. Just you behave, little husband. Don't be a tyrant. Just go to bed. At the same time, Pasquale declares that he wants a divorce. Here's the concluding section of their duet. Norina's line is light and coruscating and virtuosic, communicating the ultimate in lively feminine confidence. Norina sweeps out of the room, but not before intentionally dropping a note that Pasquale picks up and reads. He instantly concludes that it's from her lover. I'll be in the garden waiting for you. Please let me in by the hidden gate. I'll announce myself by singing. It's signed simply, Your Beloved. So Pasquale's bride is leaving to meet another man for a tryst. The old man is furious. He immediately sends for Malatesta. While he's in his room, recovering from the stress of the past few minutes, the servants suddenly appear, complaining about all the comings and goings in this crazy house they're working in. They describe what's going on with their master, their demanding mistress, and the master's young nephew. The second half of this chorus, like so much in Don Pasquale, is sung in waltz time, made doubly fascinating by the contrast between delicacy and sudden explosiveness. Malatesta is able to grab a moment with Ernesto, who's about to go down into the garden, but he's warned, don't let the old man recognize you. Malatesta now approaches Pasquale, who's looking pretty exhausted. "He's not the same man he was before," Malatesta murmurs sympathetically. He hears from Pasquale that he's been slapped by his new wife. Pasquale shows Malatesta the note from Sofronia's lover. Malatesta pretends to be shocked. Pasquale begins their duet by explaining how, with various manservants in tow, he and Malatesta will go down to the garden, surprise the guilty pair, and escort them to the local magistrate. Malatesta suggests an alternative plan. The two of them should go down to the garden alone and simply insist that the affair between Sofronia and her lover be ended immediately. To Pasquale, that isn't severe enough as a punishment for Sofronia. "Hey, this is my sister we're talking about here," protests Malatesta. But Pasquale insists that she must leave his house. He finally agrees to Malatesta's suggestion that they go to the garden, lie in wait for Sofronia, and then, if there's indisputable evidence of her infidelity, Pasquale can then insist that she leave. He sings, "My vengeance is approaching." Malatesta says to himself, the poor man's dreaming of revenge. He doesn't know what's awaiting him. Their lines eventually join in a spectacular passage of patter singing. Executing it accurately while staying together with one's partner is the ultimate achievement for Italian comic opera baritones and basses, and it certainly brings the scene to a terrifically exuberant close. We go to the garden for the opera's final scene. Ernesto begins it by singing a brief serenade. Norina appears, and the two sing their heavenly love duet. "Tell me again that you love me. Tell me you're mine." If there was ever a number in bel canto that demands absolute unanimity between soprano and tenor, a total blending of voices, and a total connection musically, it's the Norina-Ernesto duet. When the lovers hear Don Pasquale approaching, Ernesto hides. Pasquale questions Norina. "Where's your lover?" "Well, I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about." "What were you doing here then?" "I was just getting some fresh air." He insists that she leave his house. "No, here I stay." Malatesta steps forward and asks Pasquale's permission to handle the situation himself. "You must understand, dear sister, that this house will be occupied as of tomorrow by another wife, Norina, the new wife of Ernesto. That nasty thing, she and I can't live under one roof." Malatesta takes Pasquale aside to say, "Well, now Ernesto and Norina have to marry, otherwise Sofronia will never leave." Ernesto comes out of his hiding place just in time to hear Pasquale agree to give him Norina and a large fortune, to Sofronia's great objection. "Send for Norina immediately," commands Pasquale. "There's no need. She's already here," says Malatesta. So now all is revealed. Norina and Sofronia are one and the same. "You rogues!" shouts Pasquale. But he decides to forget it all, and he hopes that his nephew and Norina will be happy. To an infectiously appealing Donizetti waltz tune, Norina sings, "Here's the moral of all this. An old man would have to be soft in the head to marry." The others join her for a high-spirited ending, setting the seal on one of the true gems of bel canto comedy. Original sound recordings of musical excerpts used by permission of EMI Classics, courtesy of Angel Records, a division of Capitol Records. Thank you for listening.